Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A laugh rings out and brings her back to cigarette smoke, brass and cider, their first evening together in the moon underwater.
I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub.
Oh, Dan, how are you, Dan?
I'm very well, thanks. Parched.
Parched? Yeah. Well, let me pour you a pint of the usual.
Thank you very much.
Lager.
Yes.
Yes. How have you been this week?
Good, thanks. I went down the Japanese gardens this week.
Oh.
Have you been down there?
Oh, obviously. Barely a day goes by. How was it?
Well, it's nice because it was the one day of the year where they let you go fishing for the koi carp.
Right.
Yeah.
Catch any?
I did. Went home, fried it up. You're allowed to take them.
Are you?
It's only one day a year.
Okay.
You feel a bit guilty because they're a bit pretty to eat.
Yeah. Tasty?
But a bit bony.
Bit bony.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's nice.
Fair enough.
You'll have to come next year.
Do you know what? I've got to be honest. I overheard your conversation in the pub last night.
Oh, did you?
Yep. And something I didn't know about you, I overheard there.
Mm.
I had no idea that you used to work for the Lancashire Tourist Board.
I've done a lot of jobs in my life.
I was planning a trip up there, so I was wondering if you could just give me your top 3 attractions in Lancashire that I should go to.
Yeah, of course I can. Well, number one is obviously the Old Trafford Cricket Stadium.
Is that in?
That is in Lancashire.
Is it in Lancashire?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, that's where Lancashire play, so I assume it must be in Lancashire. It'd be odd if it was in a different county.
It's not in Manchester, isn't it? Yeah. Its own...
Yeah.
Thing?
Yeah, well, that's where Lancashire play. So okay. It's part of the Lancashire Tourist Board.
Okay, the Tourist Board covers the cricket wherever they play. Okay, fair enough.
Number two is go and sit in the Jimmy Anderson end at Old Trafford.
Right.
To enjoy the game.
Okay. Anything in Lancashire?
And the third thing in Lancashire that I would heartily recommend is just get out in the country roads and... Get out there and just feel the nature.
If I had to go to like a couple of like towns or cities in Lancashire, what would you recommend? What would you recommend I went
Lancashire.
To?
Lancashire.
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, you work for the tourist board.
Wigan is a nice place. And and Oldham.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good because that's the good thing about talking to someone from the tourist board. Because a lot of the time people go for the obvious ones like Blackpool and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But no, you've picked Wigan.
I don't like Blackpool.
Do you not?
You know, that's why they employed me. It was because everyone kept going on about Blackpool and I said it was more to Lancashire than Blackpool.
Wigan.
Yeah.
Oh, look, sorry to interrupt you, Dan. Who is that doing a BMX wheelie into the moon underwater? Oh. It's the broadcaster, Sean Keevey. Sean, how are you?
Oh, thanks.
Speaking
for having
of
us.
Lancashire.
Speaking very much of Lancashire. Or Greater Manchester, as much of it has been redesignated now. So,
yeah.
And I don't really know.
No.
I mean, you're coming to the wrong person. I've never worked with Lancashire Tourist Board, like, damn. and so I don't... They redrew the boundaries about 30 years ago.
Right.
pissed a lot of people off.
Yeah. You know?
But I still say I consider myself a Lancastrian.
Yeah. You
know? But I agree with you about Blackpool. It's rough.
Yeah, it's not that nice.
Let me retract that. It's a beautiful and historical city with some fantastic parts to it. But I think, as you rightly said, perhaps people dwell on it a bit too much.
Yeah. Stop going on about it.
Yeah,
I know.
That's what I said.
My mother-in-law lives in Cleveleys, which is just north of Blackpool. So I go to Blackpool with the kids, and the kids love it. It's a great, fun place to go in the day. I have no interest in going out in the evening there.
No. It's a bit scary. I remember once, when my boys were young, we went to the tower and there's an aquarium in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the aquarium and there's sort of sharks swimming above you and everything. It's all very exciting. And somebody was going into the aquarium with the sharks. And there was a lady on the microphone saying, "And you don't have to worry. I know people think that, you know, sharks are killers. They're not actually, more people are killed every year by falling coconuts than they are sharks." And my boy Wilf at the time was about two, and he sort of looked at me. He was like, "Can coconuts kill you, Dad?"
Yeah.
So that started off a whole phobia.
Yeah.
To this day.
Yeah.
And also, if you're in a shark tank, it's not going to be the coconuts that are going to get you there. So it's very much situation dependent, isn't it?
And if they've got one of those sort of tubes like in Jaws 4, it's not going to be a coconut that repeatedly swims against it until it smashes so that it can eat you.
No.
I don't remember Jaws 4. I think I might have gone.
The one with Michael Caine.
I think I might have lost the Jaws franchise by then.
I mean, it's...
When Michael Caine plays the shark, I remember it now. I'll tell you bloody what, I'm going to bloody eat you and I'm going to bloody enjoy it. Remember it.
It's a great role for him.
Yeah.
Sean, we're here to talk pubs. I know from listening to you on the radio for many years that you are a man who enjoys a pub.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
It's really fair.
Overly fair.
It's so on the nose. And it's a genuine concern to me that the amount of people who think that I'm sort of synonymous with pub dwelling for some reason. and maybe it's because when I used to do a radio program, the whole last hour on a Friday, we pretended it was a pub. The Open Arms, and so perhaps that might be it.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah.
Thinking about it logically.
What were your first experience of pubs growing up?
I love this. So, I would say that my first proper memory of that kind of establishment, it was the Bond Street Catholic Club, not Bond Street Central London, a completely different Bond Street in Lee, Lancashire, Greater Manchester, you know, like a sort of working men's type club. My grandfather used to be the secretary of it. So that was a bit of a hub for, you know, sort of parents and uncles and aunties. We've got a huge family. So the first sort of memory that I have is that classic 70s kid memory of being left outside in the car, which might have been a Woolsey at the time. Or a Ford Anglia or something, and every so often my dad would pop out with a bottle of Coke and a packet of salt and vinegar crisps. Yeah. You know, it was one of those classic things. He didn't do that very often, to be fair to the lad. But
I'll bring you a crisp.
He did, even on a hot day, he'd leave the windows up. You know, it's amazing I'm still here. He wasn't that much of a pub goer, my dad, you know, really. I don't want to cast him as somebody who was often in the pub. But apart from that, when I was a bit older... there was a pub called the Village Inn, and it's no longer there. It's very sad. Like many of our childhood memories, it's been razed to the ground and turned into Bellway Homes, I think. But it was gorgeous. It was sort of, you walk through the fields and you emerge on this dirt track, and there was the Village Inn. Oh. And it had a huge beer garden and I still remember it as sort of a red sort of climbing frame. And every so often, my parents would go there with me and our kid, and sometimes we'd meet up with my aunties and uncles. And, you know, again, it was the pop, the crisps, and the climbing on the red climbing frame, you know, on a nice hot summer's day, you know, sort of trapping wasps under pint pots.
Were kids not allowed in pubs then? Because I seem to have vague memories of not being allowed in pubs. What was the rule? I wasn't allowed in pubs, or was it generally the case?
It was, I think you're right. I think it really was quite a lot more of a stricture then, wasn't it? Like, of course, now
And I'm sure there's much debate to this day.
Keep them out, for God's sake, they're ruining the vibe.
You know, oh, it should be more inclusive, you know. I sit on the fence on that one, you know, because I've got children of my own who have been annoying people for quite some time now in pubs. But because, you know, since the smoking ban. But that was it, of course, back in the 80s especially, the 70s and 80s, everybody was puffing away. Yeah. And it was kind of, even if it wasn't, an actual rule, it was kind of an unwritten rule a lot of the time, wasn't it? You don't really bring your kids in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like there were gastro pubs in the 80s.
No.
That wasn't a thing. You know,
like scampi and chips.
You might, if you're lucky, you know, ploughman's lunch. But yeah, you know, outside on a hot day, you were allowed to sit out there. And that was really exciting.
Yeah. What about when you started going to pubs for drinking purposes? When would that have been? Ooh. And we're in a safe space here. You don't have to say 18.
God. I mean, this is it.
I mean, like, literally no one has said no one until 18.
I was 18, and then on my birthday, I decided to have my first sip of alcohol.
God, I loved it. Boddingtons. Yeah, it was a bit earlier than that. Because that's it. When I think about it, it's literally in the blood. I mean, not only in a sort of blowing this bag sort of way, but my granddad, again, the one I was just talking about, when he was a kid, and my uncle Alf, my great grandparents ran a pub for a while, so it's there, you know what I mean. So it's sort of all twisted into, and I, you know, I'm basically an Irish Catholic, so it's in the blood. So the taste was there, and we got into music pretty young, and my first proper memory of going to the pub was when I was about 15, which is the age my eldest is now, which is terrifying. And we'd go to places like the Stag's Head in Dean near Bolton, and we'd get about 3 buzzes, and we'd all go there, me and my mates, and we'd watch this prog rock band called Jadis. Gaz Chandler was the lead singer guitarist. We were very impressed. And and I would get John Harris, who was the singer of our band, who was a couple of years older than me, to buy me a Pilsner and lime. And, you know, I'd have a couple of Pilsner and limes. I wouldn't go mad. But that was really my that was when I started not regularly drinking, but you know.
Getting your eye in,
yeah. I tell you what, I do remember my uncle Ken, who subsequently became landlord in a lot of pubs, which we might get onto. Me and my other uncle, Paul, we went watching this gig, this boring guitarist whose name I can't remember, in Manchester, and we came back to this pub called The Boathouse on the way home in Astley. I was about just 15, and they had a pint, and they were like, "Do you want a pint?" And I was like, "Yeah."
Yeah.
"What do you want?" "Oh, a pint of Labatt's." "A pint of Labatt's." I still remember it, like, you know, the gassiest, most unpleasant, acidic, acrid lager. And they were in a rush as well. They were just a quick pint before they got home to the, you know. And I was like trying to chug this pint. It's amazing I wasn't sick all over the body. So yeah, those were the sort of first, the entry moments.
You mentioned your eldest is at the age you were when you started going to pubs. Have they shown any signs of pub interest? Because it doesn't seem it's quite the same now.
It's not, is it? I don't know what you guys found, but like, it's really interesting, isn't it? And a lot of it's positive, I suppose. But I pathetically find it I'm a bit sad about it in a way. I kind of almost wish that not yet, I mean, 15's a bit young to be sort of, you know, chomping on the orbit and pretending that you haven't had 6 pints of snake bite.
Hello, mother and father. How are you? I've just been out at the library.
What a nice time in the park we just had. I'm just going to be sick because I've got a stomach bug. Yeah, all that. You know, didn't ring any alarm bells. But they don't, do they? The youth, you know, this particular strata of them don't seem to be that interested. And I did hear, I think it was some on Instagram a few months ago, but it was some young woman talking about it and on a podcast, and she was saying, "My generation don't really drink, no." And people say, "Oh, it's because you're vain, it's because you want to be insta fabulous and you want to keep your figure." And she was like, "It's not that, it's because we feel like we're a surveilled generation, like everything is captured on, everything's filmed, everything's Snapchatted. You can't just go out and get bollocksed and be sick on yourself without it being all over everybody at school knowing or everybody at college." So, and I thought, oh, that's a bit sad, you know, a bit of a shame. Because we could just, I mean, obviously nobody knows what terrible, awful exploits we got up to, because it was before the invention of cameras or steam.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about telling the story for a long time, but it sort of fits in.
Brilliant. I'm excited for this.
Once we went to our local pub, I'm not going to say who I was with, and a good friend of mine, and we
were... Maybe it's because you're name dropping, but...
No.
He might be called...
Yeah, no.
Stephen Tyler.
Yeah. I mean, he was there. Yeah, we were 18 and we're at a pub, and local pub, and we got to closing time and we said, oh, do you do a takeaway drinks? And he was really dismissed, quite rude to us, actually. We'd been behaving. We'd only been in there for one or two pints. It's not like we'd been shouting. You know, we were well-behaved young men of 18. And quite rude, and sort of put a flea in our ear and, you know, said, closing time, get out, sort of thing. And we went home, we were chuntering about it, went back to my friend's house, chuntering about it, and his parents were away. And then I don't know who thought of it, but we said, oh, we should get our revenge. So we went back to the pub, and we, you know, the A-shaped signs they have outside, which might say Sunday lunch. We nicked both of them, and then my friend had a large bonfire in the back garden.
Oh, no.
And we burned God.
This story's much... Worse than I thought.
Yeah. We burned them and took pictures of standing in front of the fire with, you could see the name, I'm going to say the name of the pub. You can see the name of the pub.
Up in flames.
On the board, like behind us.
That's psychopathic. And
then
because
we
Because they wouldn't give you takeaway drink.
Because they were
of their
rude.
Attitude.
Because they were rude. Wow. Yeah. But after we'd done it all, we all went, that was a bit much, wasn't it? Anyway,
it was like we
sort of just whipped each other up. It's not something any of us would normally. We were really good lads. Like, it's not something. Oh, you know, it's not something I would normally do.
Yeah, loads of arson.
And we forgot about it. And then a few months later, my friend realised that. I don't know whether he did it and he'd forgot, or someone else in the family had taken the role to be...
Oh, no. Like to Max Spielman or somewhere.
Yeah, to, you know, to like...
To be developed.
To be developed. Oh. And he was like, oh, God. He was panicking for like, you know, they took a week, didn't it? So it's like a week of going, what if they see that reported to the police?
Because the name of the pub's there.
The name of the pub was there. Fortunately, that didn't happen. But he showed us a picture. I mean, it was quite a demonic picture.
God, the things you
do. Still have a picture.
I think he might have it. Yeah, he might have it. Yeah,
I'll see if I can get it. Worst things that you've done. Yeah, you know, when you've been kicked out of a pub. I've never taken revenge on that scale.
Yeah, I'm not proud of myself.
Only really you and Jeffrey Dahmer do things like that, isn't it? Really? Did you ever get in any sort of scrapes of the law when you were younger, or any sort of behaviour of that ilk?
Well, you know, not. I mean, a bit like you, I was like a pretty good kid, really, for the most part. You know, quite a compliant person. It was only when I became older I became more thorny and difficult and anti-establishment. Like, you know, like a sort of firebrand maverick that I am now. But when I was a kid, I wasn't like that. But we had our band that the influential but little-known post-punk band Mosque that we were all in. And one night, I remember, we decided that we needed to do a poster campaign for an upcoming gig, you know. So we went round to... next doors, we necked a bottle of Glenfiddich between us for a bit of Dutch courage, and then out we went, you know, with the posters and with the, you know, the sort of roller and all the paste, and we got about seven or eight up, and we got busted by the cops, the fuzz, the filth, the fez. They were all over us like a cheap suit. You know, it was like the Sweeney. I was chased down the side of Romino's Pizza Place. Held up against the wall. Actually, that bit didn't happen. I'm just elaborating.
Yeah.
The bit that I remember is I think that our Orms and John and everybody else scarpered, and I got sort of caught. And
that always happens. One always gets caught.
Yeah, everybody else goes. That's it. Red-handed, paste-handed. And I remember talking to the policeman. He was like, come here. He was still in the car. He's leaning out the window. And he went, what's your name and all this? Sean Keaveney. And I think I was being a bit James Dean to begin with because I was still a bit drunk, a bit rebel without a clue. And he went, what does your mum know you're out? Because I must have been, I was about 16, I suppose, at this time. And I was like, no. And he went, and he looked at me and he went, and you don't care either, do you? like I was a proper miscreant, yeah. You know. And that was the moment. I was nearly crying then. I was like, I mean, she would, she'd be really upset. And then he was like, get in the back, I'm taking you home. And it was funny, you know, he was driving us back and there was a police car coming this way and he was like, doing this to the guy, we've got him. Yeah. Like thumb in the back, you know, we've got the bastard. So that was about the closest I got to.
And he pulled up outside the house in the car.
Dropped me off. Oof. But, you know,
he didn't knock on the door.
No, he didn't do any of that.
Oh, God.
Do you mean my dad know that? Well, they'll soon find out.
Yeah.
That was 1989. Don't think I've had that many scrapes of the law alcohol wise since then, though. Yeah.
Good. I've never had any alcohol related scrapes of the law, I don't think. The closest I came to any form of bad behaviour as a child was when we had these big, in the farmer's field near us, there was like the big, you know, the round hay bales, not the square ones, the massive ones.
Yeah.
We used to try and like climb on those and see how far you could stay on it while they rolled down.
Yeah.
Which definitely would mean someone would then fall underneath and just get run over by one. But what we didn't realise, we were doing this, then we sort of just fall over and everyone would laugh. We didn't realise these things were going down and just smashing into a fence at the bottom of the field. So they were, because only after we'd done this for a while, we looked around and went, oh, that fence has absolutely been destroyed by these things. So that was
willful damage.
Yeah.
Well, not willful. Willless.
Unwillful. Yeah.
Unwilled.
Yeah.
That's some real agri crime, that,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, like,
very
it's a
rural,
huge problem in rural areas. I live in Norwich now. That would get on Lookies. Yeah. I'd get about a 20-minute feature if that happened now.
Well, of course it would, because someone would have Instagrammed the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And filmed a funny bit of music underneath it.
But we need to get on to designing your pub, Sean. But first of all, Dan, would you like to explain your bell to Sean?
I've got a bell here, Sean.
Oh, lovely.
That's
lovely,
nice.
Lovely bell,
it?
Isn't it?
Yep.
Shiny on the end.
If you hear that ring, that means that one of your choices will materialise mysteriously on the bar in front of us.
Ooh.
You don't have to drink it.
Don't have to drink it.
You can take it home with you.
Yeah.
You can look at it. You can drink it. You can do what you want.
I've not driven here, though.
So you're
not, either.
I'm not currently doing dry jam.
So... Exciting.
Brilliant. Well, this is
something to look forward to.
Now I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
There we go. Thank you, Dan, for explaining your bell.
I hope you've picked things that you like. Sometimes people pick things that they don't like because it's got a good story attached.
That's their fault. And what you pick, you mean the bell picks?
The bell picks.
The bell.
No, they pick something.
Oh, yeah, and the bell materialises.
The things that they pick and then the bell picks the...
Right, okay. You're not involved in the things materialising.
Of course not.
Right.
I can't remember what I picked now, so it'll be a lovely surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
Or not.
Well, I hope you remember at least something, John, because it's time to pick your draft choices. Mm. What is your first choice on draft?
I remember that the first choice was Theakston's XB.
Yeah.
Which just brings back so many memories for me, because if you're talking pubs, for me, as we've already established, started pretty young, and it wasn't my entire network of northern mates were all, to a lesser or greater extent, beer enthusiasts stroke monsters, I suppose you might say, back in the day, you know. In fact, one of them, my friend Damien Doherty, is such an enthusiast, he now runs like his own mini brewery. He's got quite a responsible job, but he makes these Emperor's Brewery stouts and ales and things. He's really good. He gets very high marks from the people in the know. But yeah, so we were all very much obsessed with beer. And one of the first things that we were within 15 miles of the Hacienda, for instance, when it was all kicking off. We were massively into the Stone Roses and New Order and all the Manchester bands, you know, Happy Mondays. But it never occurred to us to go to the Hacienda. It just never occurred to us, even though it was like a 34 bus away. It was just felt like it was a different, it was a culture we weren't part of for some reason. And, you know, we couldn't get ecstasy for love nor money in Lee. We really couldn't. So what instead we would do is we would form bands and play in pubs. And we'd invite our friends and we'd charge a quid on the door. and then we get drunk on the local beers, you know what I mean? But then some the for a holiday sometimes, some of us would go camping in the lakes. And we'd specifically go to this place called Outgate, which is near sort of Ambleside, Hawkshead. And we'd set our tents up, and then there would be this pilgrimage, this sort of hour-long walk through the cow fields to a pub called the Outgate, which I don't know if it's there or not anymore. I've tried to find it, and it feels mythical now. When I go back to where I thought it was, it's not there. And it makes me feel, it's a bit Narnia-y. Yeah. You know, I'm sure it was here. But it's not here now. But then we were drinking a lot.
Looking around going,
what's happened? And we would go and, you know, we would drink an awful lot of session bitter. And that was a holiday, you know, but the Theakston's XB, all those kind of slightly higher than a normal session brew ABV.
Yeah, 4.5%.
4.5%, yep. But not balloon juice. You know, that you'd always get some hubristic drinkers would then start going into things like Old Peculiar.
Right.
And then they'd have two or three of those, and then it's like, oh, where's Dom gone? We've not seen him for an hour. He's been sick in the toilet, so we're going to have to, you know, rescue him. So that's the sort of memory for me. It's like the Lake District is my ultimate happy place. So going to a pub like the Golden Rule in Ambleside or somewhere like that, drinking a pint like that and just, you know, a packet of salt and vinegar peanuts, you know, a decent walk. I mean, that's what it's all about.
It's cask ales you were generally having at that time rather than lagers and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, apart of it, obviously the Labatt's would put you off, you know. And it was before that I remember, anyway, the advent of... You know, obviously you probably had Stella, didn't you? Or you'd have bottles of Holston pills.
There's a lot of Beck's around in those days, wasn't it?
I remember my entry level with Beck's was the 1990 World Cup. And we bought like four bottles of Beck's each for the semi-final.
Yeah.
You know, that's the great, which, you know, it all went sour, of course, very quickly. But yeah, it was mostly cask ales, yeah.
This spoke to me because this was genuinely, this was, first time I drank this was in the pub, very close to the one I talked about at the top of the show, where we never did anything nasty to that pub. It was the first beer I ever liked.
Ah.
I didn't like, because I tried, a bit like you with Labatt's, I tried lager, didn't really like it. And we went to that pub, same friend, and he said, oh, try this, Theakston's XB. I was like, oh, that's quite nice. It was the first one, so it's a real... And I hardly ever see it, but it's a little bit mythical to me. There's always got a very special place in my heart because this is what people are talking about when they talk about that beer that they like. I finally understood it because I wasn't really drinking anything at the time because I just didn't like it.
So much bad beer, you know, and like back in the 70s and 80s, it was like really like Stone's Bitter and stuff, wasn't it? Really, really horrible stuff. And that, you're right, that might be one of the first ones that you're not having to choke down holding your nose, you know. I remember with my first ever girlfriend, she used to be in a brass band. It was very much like brassed off, you know. And honestly, we used to, we'd have to wake up at 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning, like so many times during the year to go to brass band competitions that they are sending nowhere. But there was one in Mass, I think, isn't it called Massham in Yorkshire, where they brew Theakston's. And there was this, it was like the nerve centre of Theakston's. And me and her dad, JD, still a mate of mine, we were like,
Masham, yeah.
This is unbelievable. I'm afraid we might miss the competition. You know, we were just like numerous pints in, you know, by about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's fantastic. But great memories. The bits that I can remember.
They're the... I think there's only two breweries left that still have a cooperage. Do you know what a cooperage is?
Are they
the pigeons?
No. That make the barrels?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that at all, yeah.
So they still make barrels?
They still make them. And when you get... when you get made from a... what is it? From an apprentice cooper.
Yeah.
You become... The next thing is a journeyman cooper, like a barrel maker, right? And they have a thing called a trussing in ceremony, which obviously they're just doing it now for PR and stuff, obviously. But they did a video of it. So they get this guy, this young guy, and it starts with the ringing of the axes, which involves they make a 54-gallon cask, and then they put him in the barrel in front of all family and friends.
Fishing down Niagara Falls.
And then they pour... oh, yeah. Then they all bang on the planks to make to finish it off. It's like, it's quite scary. And then they pour over him old yeast, oak shavings and beer slop. So it is like a sort of beery tar and feathery. And like,
they set fire to it.
I read it and I thought, that doesn't sound nice. And I watched it. It was like 20 times worse than I imagined. It looked really disgusting. Because all the like hops just sort of stuck to him. And then they just roll the barrel around with him in it. And then they do that for a bit. And then he gets up and he's covered in all that shit. And then they fire him. And then immediately rehire him back as on the promotion.
If you don't get rehired back, right? Yeah. That's when you had HR, I reckon. Yeah. I've just had that done to me. That's interesting. Yeah, I was at Wild Beer Company once. And they had like all the barrels they age beers in and stuff like that. And they showed a guy taking them apart and all that. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
So, Sean, what is going to accompany Thixton at your pub?
Well, I mean, you know, you've got to cater for all tastes, you know. So you've got the bitter on there. And the only other drink, really, that you really need is a crisp and refreshing export lager. So I'm putting a Peroni on.
Oh, nice. Why Peroni?
Well, I like it. I do like
good
it.
Reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only real reason on this, isn't it? That was big things I don't like.
Thanks for coming in, Sean. But I do. I love it. I mean, maybe I'm going off it a bit, actually. No, I shouldn't say that because you never know. They might hear this and say, well, here's £200,000 and a 2 years' supply of Peroni.
Yeah.
Sponsor your podcast. But I do love it. But perhaps it's reminding me of a slightly earlier time in my life, maybe. You know, that sort of mid to late noughties into, you know, the last 10 years. I've got a lot of, again, vague memories of, because, you know, often when you're out in pubs, especially in London, you're not always going to get a great pint of anything else. You're not always going to get a great pint of Draft Cascale. You know, Timmy Taylor Landlord's a great one.
Oh yeah.
But it's not always good sometimes. It's a bit ropey. Same with Guinness. But, you know, so I think Peroni's a really good, reliable go-to sort of, I don't know much about football, but, you know, like maybe a sort of Brian Robson style, you know, reliable. You know what you're going to get. Sort of secure, fizzy, strong. Oh my God, I've had four pints and now I'm completely arsehole.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of drink, isn't it?
It does feel quite early noughties, doesn't it?
Probably. I reckon. Don't know it probably why. Is. Yeah. Probably was about then, wasn't it? That it was really prevalent.
I reckon I could have listened to some garage music whilst having a Peroni. I could listen to With a Little Bit of Luck.
MC Neat. DJ Luck and MC Neat.
Yeah, there we go.
That was it. You reminded me of like one of the first times I came. I'm a real late bloomer on everything, but I remember being about 23 and we came to visit our mate Darren, who lived in London, and we went to some club somewhere, God knows what it was, not a proper club. It was like, maybe like an indie club or something, somewhere down in Soho, and all they would sell was cans of Red Stripe, you know, and lathers like us, we just weren't used to this. It was really odd. And I remember it was £2.50 a can. Oh. And I was like, you must be fucking joking. £2.50 a can. This is ridiculous. I've only got a tenner. I can't get pissed on this. This is ridiculous. But, you know, obviously, as I moved up the greasy pole of society, I eventually became a man of means and could spend as much money as I wanted of my disposable income on getting pissed on very expensive Peroni.
Yeah,
there we go. Yeah, I remember I was more of an indie club man than a nightclub.
Surprise me.
Man. And I went to, but for some reason, we went to Home Nightclub in Leicester Square, which is like this new super club. There's a few, around the time sort of Fabric was opening, all those ones. There are a few of them opening up in London. I went there midweek for some reason. I can't remember why. And they sold Beck's and it was £3.50. And I remember thinking, that is disgusting. No one is going to ever pay. I drank one bottle of Beck's and then I paid £3.50 for it. Yeah. So
it's immense, though. How quickly it's not just beer, obviously, cost of living for everything, but how quickly you get used to it. You just, and I guess that's what big companies rely on. That is their own. I'm not. No fucking way I'm paying that, but at the same time, I'm alcohol dependent somewhere. So I actually will pay it. You got me there. But yeah, I mean, that was it. Like back in the old, like being in sixth form and getting bussed out to nightclubs like Mr. Smith's in Warrington, you know. And whilst a lot of other teenagers would have been taking nefarious drugs, we didn't do that. But yeah, that's a horrible memory of like £4 for a plastic carton of Carlsberg or something, and feeling disgusted with yourself.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do.
No, you're trapped.
And we'd always hear stories like if you went to a nightclub in Ibiza, a water was like £25 or something. Like, well, I'm not going to go then. I'll just stay at the London Astoria, thank you.
We know how to live.
I think you're right about the 2000s, though, for the heyday. Because I didn't remember this. I had no recollection of this, but they relaunched their bottle with a new sleeker neck, and they actually paid to have a shop in Sloane Square where literally it was dubbed Emporio Peroni, and it was so exclusive that no one was allowed inside, and it was literally just a bottle of Peroni on a pedestal, on a sort of thing, just inside.
What?
And it had, yeah. And the export manager said, Emporio Peroni will create intrigue and excitement amongst shoppers and beer drinkers alike. Those two people are different.
Yeah. And, that's another way of saying this is for men and women, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that.
This has moved on a bit in time now. Now they're trying to use like codes to say what it is.
Yeah.
Shoppers and beer drinkers.
Yeah, and I saw a picture and they had a security man outside and it was literally a small shop with a bottle of Peroni inside and no one could go in.
I think that's an interesting point in beer history, though, is when you get the marketers coming in, you know, because in the 70s into the 80s, obviously, you had the great adverts, you know, everybody was watching television, 20 million people watching Coronation Street or something. It was the heyday. But in some ways, it was in its infancy, wasn't it? It was a bit unsophisticated in some places. But when the ad men started really getting the teeth into to beer, and like Guinness adverts being the obvious example, that was, it was kind of art what they did, wasn't it? Yeah. But I always found it funny what they did, what they tried to do with Stella Artois, you know, and to this day, you know, Stella Artois. You know, not this idea that the Belgian beer for ingredients is so sophisticated, you know, you drink it from the chalice, the chalice. And it's like, yeah, that's not my experience of Stella Artois. My experience of Stella is like being out in Wigan somewhere and some guy smashing his chalice into some other guy's face, you know, after 8 pints of it. It's a little bit less sophisticated than what you than what you're trying to portray, you know.
Four cans for £6 on the train.
Yeah,
that's,
exactly.
That's more the vibe.
Blue bag of cans on the train. You know.
But there was a time, wasn't there, when beer adverts went from comedy to trying to make it look cool.
Yeah.
Around that sort of era, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. We do a sort of weekly radio show, a Patreon show, Community Garden Radio. But we have, what I started to do for some reason was find old 80s foreign lager ads, because they've got great songs attached to them. There's a great one that the San Miguel one's brilliant. It's just really see San Miguel. It's really brilliant. I still remember that. And there's an Estrella one, which is just, oh, off the chart. But you must remember the Skol advert from the 80s.
Yeah.
Skol. Yeah. So that, but that's it. It was that moment from going from silly to serious and sexy.
Follow the bear.
Actually.
That was the,
Low and Bright.
Yeah.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Oh, great days.
Memories. Sean, you've presented a breakfast show for many a year.
Mm.
That throws out your body clock a little bit.
Big time.
A lot of people will finish work and go to the pub. Did you ever finish work and go to the pub on a breakfast show?
Well, ooh, that's a really good question.
Thank you.
There is definitely, and again, I'm letting myself down here, or exposing myself as the enthusiastic drinker that I am, who won't let something as trifling as getting up at 5 a.m. get in the way of a good drink. Because I remember when I took that show in 2007, I said to all my friends, this is great, because I tell you what we'll do. We'll have afternoon beers. That's what we'll do. It'll be great. It's not going to stop me in my tracks. Turns out that we had a kid about a year after that, so that stopped everything anyway. But like, that never happened either, because actually you need a nap at that time of the day. But more often than not, it was the other end. So especially about 10 or 11 years ago, for all kinds of reasons, I sort of had a second summer of love there. I was went back into hedonism for a couple of years, and there was a lot of, let's go to the Mercury Music Prize and basically stay out all night and then and present the breakfast show.
Oh, wow.
And that it probably only happened in reality about maybe a handful of times. But I've definitely got, again, quite hazy memories. I remember once there was a Mercury Phoenix Trust, which is the Freddie Mercury charity, aid charity. They had this massive party. And me and my old mate, Matt Everett, went, both stonking Queen fans anyway, and it was a hot day, I remember this, and I was dressed as Freddie Mercury, the sort of Live Aid period, vest, actual moustache. I really went like full method, and it started at 6 p.m. and we walked through the doors, and the first thing that happened was this lady gave us shots of vodka.
Oh wow.
And it was at that moment,
that's setting the tone,
isn't it? Is, isn't it?
Yeah.
We realised at that point that the next day's show was going to be interesting, you know. But what we found was there's a real line in the sand that if you are going to do that, and this is my advice to younger people, I wouldn't do this now. If you're going to present, do something important in the morning, and I don't mean if you're a Security Council UN or something like that, or a tractor driver. I'm talking about if you present, you know, yeah, exactly. You know, perhaps not Magdi Yaqub, but that's an old reference.
Yeah, it's very good.
But you know, if you're presenting a show, go all in or don't go at all. You know, there's nothing worse than having 5 or 6 pints, going to bed at 11, half past 11, getting up at 5 o'clock, tired. you've not, there's no fun in you. Mm. Whereas if you stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning, have 90 minutes sleep and then go on air, it's the result is if not hilarious, very interesting, you know, and always worth a listen, you know. But very rarely would I go out after, except there was one time I remember we were nominated for a Loaded Laughter Award. I remember 2013, I'll never forget it. And I'd never won anything in my entire life, apart from a key ring when I was 8. And I thought, this is it. I'm finally going to, we're hitting the big time here. We're going to get an award. And as soon as we got to this place in East London, it was like, right, we've got to crack on with these awards. We're going to be hitting the bar very, very shortly. And bloody Greg James, it was the first award and it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. And I was up against Greg James and he bloody well won it. And I was there then. It was at 11:30 in the morning. The only thing I could do was get absolutely bladdered. So that was perhaps the only time that I was so wantonly irresponsible. And then I just went out all afternoon, just like posting up posters.
I think people in the public eye are often more drunk than you think they are. Like, do you know what I mean? Like people, like I've been with a friend who's a journalist who's then been phoned up and asked to give an opinion on something when he's been absolutely hammered.
Really?
And done a live thing on Radio 5. Won't name who he is.
will you write the name down on a piece of paper for later for us?
I will tell you when we finish.
Oh, right. I love this.
And also my friend, I won't name this person either, but this other friend works for a right-wing newspaper.
Right.
And was at the Carlton Club, the big home of the Conservative Party and all this sort of stuff. And he was there, and Michael Howard, the former leader of the Conservative Party, was there, and he was absolutely hammered during the day talking to him. And he was abusing my friend because he had a beard. Like, this was only a few years ago, like 3 years ago. It's not that. It wasn't an outrageous time to have a beard. But he was going, "You're too scruffy. You should be in here with a beard," just like hammering him. But like, and to beyond the point where it was like, okay, fine. It was like just constantly, "Hey, go shave your beard." Okay, I got it, Michael. And then he said, Michael Howard went out and I don't know if he saw the TV or something, but he basically had gone out the Carlton Club and then was on the news outside doing some
quite high end
thing. Yeah, I don't know whether the story's probably censored by the podcast, but
that's ridiculous. So people can function on quite a high level when they need to after having had a skinful. We had the brilliant comedian Susie Ruffle on the Daily Grind a few weeks ago, and she was talking about how when she thought she'd had a night off. And she was out getting drunk with a friend, and she was like a bottle and a half of wine down. And then she got a text saying, "Why you're supposed to be on in 15 minutes? Why are you not here?" She'd forgotten that she was supposed to be doing a gig.
Oh, God.
She managed to get there and do the gig, but she was so drunk that she was sick into somebody's acoustic guitar. So that, you know, it can happen.
Can happen, can't it? Yeah.
It's not happened to me yet, but it probably will.
Easily done.
Sean, you get two bottles or cans for your pub. What's going to be your first choice?
Okay, well, this is a bit retro, this one, but it does bring back great memories. That's why I've chosen McEwan's Export. You've not. I'm so excited.
Oh,
I don't believe
my
it.
Out comes
the bell.
Where did the Moon Underwater get this from? 1986.
I know. This is such a blast from the past.
I didn't know it still exists.
Did you hear that?
There he is. The laughing
intake
cavalier.
Of breath then.
Wow, we.
We've got four cans. This is exactly how we would have rolled cans. As well back in like 1988.
I noticed the McEwan's Export comes with a paper thing, so they've moved.
They've moved on.
Oh, that's biodegradable.
Yeah, that's good.
That's really nice good, touch. Isn't it? I mean, what a great drink. I mean, I don't know if I'll agree with myself now. I want to try it. Oh, okay. We've got a proper pint pot. Can I crack this open?
You
then?
Can, of course you can do whatever you like.
I'm gonna join you.
This is great.
I've had a McEwan's for a long time.
I'm not sure I've ever had a McEwan.
I
must have
done
in Scotland.
I think McEwan's was on the bar somewhere when we were at university. No, somewhere.
Had
it.
Yeah.
This is the full Proustian Rush, this. The Proust Ian Rush for all the Liverpool 80s Liverpool fans out there. So this, right, this all this is pure...
I called that badly.
Pure...
That was a bit more lively than I thought it was going to be.
Dan's got head there.
Yeah.
It's probably not that pleasant a drink now because we've got much more sophisticated palates and stuff, and we're used to all kinds of range with craft ales and stuff. But it was a fizzy, strong brown ale. Like this was kind of like the if you couldn't really afford Newcastle Brown, wasn't it? That was what we used to think of it as. And we went through a period of necking lots of this, like house parties. I remember going on a geography field trip when in 1987, Jesus, so I was like only just not even 15 yet. And it was so brilliant because in Ambleside Youth Hostel, and we'd spend all day out in field, out in the field, sort of asking shoppers how they got to town. You know, we'd do surveys. Did you drive? Did you come on the train? You know, we took it quite seriously. And then we spent most of the afternoon running about with whoopee cushions, scaring old ladies looking in jewellery shops because we thought that was funny. But in the evenings, Mr. Mitchell and Mr. Broxholm were brilliant geography teachers in the sense that they were so laissez-faire. They just wanted to go to the pub in Ambleside. So they'd get us all in the back of the van and just drive into town and you're like, get out here, we'll pick you up at 10 o'clock. And they'd piss off to the pub and dropped us outside the offie. And one of us, I can't remember who it was who looked old enough, went in, got a load of beer, and McEwan's Export, and we just sit on the municipal park getting absolutely bladdered. I mean, that's education, isn't it?
It is.
That is.
All day and in the evening.
Yeah. All day, yeah. Oh, it's horrible.
I'm going to have a sip of it now. I can't remember how this tastes.
It is not a Theakston's XB.
It's not good, is it? It's
full flavoured, it says in the can. I think that's true.
It's too full. It needs emptying out a bit.
It's 4.5%. I always thought it would be more for some reason. I don't know.
Right, but you think it was almost like that balloon juice that gets
Yeah,
you.
I think it was... Yeah.
When something's export, you think it's going to be like six, don't you, or something.
It's sad. I mean, the other thing that a 16-year-old would always reach for would be the special brew, of course.
Yeah.
Mm.
And if you could secure four cans of special brew for a house party, then you knew that you were going to end up, you know, not in hospital, but you were going to end up in a bad state. Yeah. You know, or you were going to have a good night.
I went through a point in a sort of slightly early 2000s indie ironic way of drinking special brew, sort of like as bringing it along to parties. I'll bring some special brew, that'll be funny.
Yeah.
Then you have to drink the special brew, and that's not funny. It tastes like not very nice. You're drinking glue.
Yeah.
It's terrible stuff.
Yeah. This is, I'm not against this. I could happily drink this.
It is Scotland's most popular canned ale.
Though is it still?
Hasn't been made in Scotland for a long time.
Where does it get made now, then?
It gets made now in Bedford.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a disappointment.
A lot of them get made in Bedford now. Yeah. Red Stripe come from Bedford. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think a lot of them do.
Red Stripe comes from Bedford.
I think so.
Imagine that. Jamaica's most popular lager coming from bloody Bedford.
Well, there's a couple of things I do like about this beer, though. One is that... So this is just a fact, but it leads on to the thing I like, which is by 1889, it was one of the largest breweries in the world, is when they were brewing in Scotland, producing, according to the website, a truly magnificent 456 million pints a year. And I started laughing, thinking, oh, they've jumped on the McDonald's bandwagon. But then I was finding out about the character on the front.
Oh,
right?
yeah.
And this is actually based, it is actually based on... the famous painting of the Laughing Cavalier.
Oh, yeah.
He's more laughing on the can than in real life. There's the,
that's him, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who did that one? Wasn't.
And that was by Franz Hals.
Tip of my tongue.
1624. And when they were talking about this was 1935, when they were talking about this, they said the Cavalier character was... and it said it was a hearty, spirited character, a magnificent icon the public will love. So actually, I think... the whole let's put Mook at the front of everything was done
was
by them
first.
Before McDonald's.
They've
got a legal case where there's a blame.
Well,
there's a
maybe
claim.
They have.
That's you know what, though? That brings it right up to date, really. Do you remember the McLibel stuff in the 80s?
Yeah.
Who was the pro bono lawyer representing a lot of the kids who were standing up against McDonald's?
Yeah.
It was Sir Keir Starmer, thank you very much.
Oh.
But there you go. We could get him back in. He's not busy, is he? We could get him
to this year.
Yeah, get McEwen's on, get on the McEwen's case.
Yeah.
But that is, it's unpleasant.
But no, but listen, I found a Tesco customer that really loves it.
Because is this like him with his surveys?
This you go to Tesco asking people. This is the
reviews on McEwen's export.
This is the review, and I quite often for beers and stuff, I'm looking for information. It's nice to look at reviews because there's sometimes some good stuff in there. And this one has just caught my eye. I'm 70 years old now, and I have drank quite a lot of McEwen's export. I don't want to say too much about this because come the day I don't want replace my beer, and there is none left for me. I drink about 4+ per night, every night. I have drank this for the last 40 years. Somewhere in the middle of the sentence, it just collapsed.
Yeah, he's gone on to his fourth can.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least 4 cans there. That's a proper flat pack sentence, that, isn't it?
Really enjoyed it.
I think of McEwen's more for their lager. And I think of that because of football shirt sponsorship.
Oh, yeah.
Rangers and I think Blackburn as well.
Yeah, they sponsored a lot of football clubs.
Yeah.
McEwen's.
90s.
So McEwen's lager, it always said, wasn't it? It wasn't just the general McEwen's.
Yeah. Yeah, when they say, yeah, I think you're right, actually. Yeah.
Maybe they just didn't need to push export because it's doing well.
No.
And to be fair, I never see anyone drinking McEwen's lager now, so.
This is, I mean, whereas Newcastle Brown, I bet, God, I wish I'd said that now, is probably still relatively palatable. That's not so good. But again, I am getting so many lovely memories of, you know, sitting on municipal parks, trying to get off with girls. And failing, you know, just wonderful memories. McEwen's fueled.
Wonderful. What's joining McEwen's in the world of cans or bottles?
Well, our local Willesden Green Beer and Burger is an absolute, it's a bloody oasis, right? Because the annoying thing about where we live is that it was apparently something to do with the fact that it used to be Quaker owned. And so it's a bit of a dry state, really. So there aren't any good pubs for quite a long way. Certainly not within staggering distance. It's a shame. But they've got this little beer and burger. You get a nice burger, which you would expect, and you can get lots of nice beer. Fridges and fridges of stuff. I always go to the stout section. I either like a really nice posh export lager, if I'm not having a Peroni, or straight to the stouts. And the king of the stouts, again, I will say, this sounds like product placement on behalf of my mate, but it's not, is Emperor's Brewery stouts. Because if you've not tried them, you might not have tried them because it's literally like a little cottage industry.
I've not.
Damien makes it's almost
impossible to get hold of them.
Yeah.
Like when he makes a batch, he puts it up on like Facebook or something and he says it's literally, it's gone. So it's actually really hard.
It really is. By complete accident, he's sort of created this, I suppose it's that supply and demand thing, you know. And it's getting such a good reputation that more and more people are saying, well, why don't you go just make more? And he literally can't because he's got a proper job. But you've got to give it a try. It's like you might be quite better than me at naming some of the... a lot of it is sort of sci-fi puns. You know, he's got a Kessel Run. He's a big Star Wars fan. Yeah. A lot of them are named after, you know, various sort of sci-fi Star Wars related things. Least said about that to George Lucas, Palpatine. The better. That's it. Yeah, it's one of those. But they're all like, the entry levels are around 7.5, going all the way up to about 14%. So you've got to be very careful. The
Imperial Stout.
That's it.
The Palpatine, which he did with Turning Point, is described as a peach plum and charred nectarine beach smoked imperial stout. That is 12%.
That sounds lovely.
It sounds really nice. And that retails at $8.90 a can.
Yeah.
But if you can get it.
You're not going to want a lot of that.
Exactly. It's really funny because the one I like, I love stuff like, you know, chocolate and vanilla. You know, I've got a sweet tooth. And he's got a few of these as well. And what I like about it is that on a Friday night, if I'm feeling like a little drink, I'll go and maybe get one or two cans, little bitty cans. And it makes me feel like I'm not really having a drink. Even though, of course, that's effectively like having a bottle of wine. I think my wife's not fully cottoned on to it yet. I hope she doesn't listen, because she thinks, oh, she's really cut down on his drinking, Sean.
Yeah. When one fact, tiny can yeah. a night, yeah.
Sorry about that.
So but, you've got an in there. So have you got sort of a channel you can,
yeah, you know. You want me to hook you up, don't yeah, you? I can yeah. see that in your eyes. Nice.
Definitely. Stout man.
Yeah.
Stout man. Yeah, I think that he would really love to go full production at some point, you know. And we're all just hanging on his coattails. You know, maybe he'll do that Logan Plant thing. Wasn't it Robert yes. Plant's son?
Who Beaver Town. Neck oil on Beaver Town, yeah.
You know, yeah. I just think, one eye on the main chance, you know. I've known him for 34 years. If he makes it big, I want shares. You know, I mean, I've bought enough of the stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, he says, doesn't he? He says, I'm not a brewery. I'm someone who makes beer. That's
yeah,
what he says.
So do you independently know of? You've heard of Emperor's Brewery before?
No, I did some research.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
well, yeah. I think I had heard of it, and maybe I've had one at some point, because it's when I saw it, I recognised it.
It's funny how in the local beer and burger, I hadn't mentioned it to them, but they were recommending it to me and saying, this guy is like so amazing. We can't get much of his beer, yeah. but it's like, if you should try it when you see it, it's like, he's one of my best mates. You know, like a saddle.
I think I can get this beer.
But yeah, honestly, it's what I like about it is it's you don't have to, you can, it's, it is like having a really nice wine or something. Yeah. You know, you don't have to drink lots of it, you just have a little bit of it. And also, it for me, because I've got a sweet tooth, it's like a dessert and a drink at the same time. It's a win-win.
Lovely. Well, I the bit of some research that I did, because I was curious about the whole Star Wars thing, and I listened to a podcast and he just said, I'm just a Star Wars fan, but he brews from Colville,
yeah,
in Leicestershire, which is, and he didn't really mention this, and I thought, oh, it must be to do with that, because Colville was where they made all the Star Wars toys in the 70s.
Did not
Palitoy
know
were based yeah. there.
I did
some research.
Wow.
And they used to make like Action Man and Tiny Tears and all the Star Wars stuff. And there's actually a roundabout in Colville. That when you look from a bird's eye yeah. view, it's the Death Star. Like,
you're kidding me.
Yeah. It's quite cool, actually.
They've done that's incredible. And
that's just sort of, it doesn't exist anymore, but it's a little nod to their history, you know, because most of the town used to basically make toys. That's where they were there making toys. So
well,
they made Play-Doh and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
God,
so I thought that was it. I thought that must be it, but it's just, he's just a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
I thought, so I went down this whole rabbit hole, watched the whole video about that roundabout, thinking, oh, that'll be it. And then when I heard him talk about it, he said, no, I'm just like, I'm child of the 70s, I just like Star Wars.
We'll have to chat with him about that.
Yeah.
Terrific. Mm. A couple of great choices there, Sean. Now, Sean, do you enjoy a pub quiz?
Yes.
Well, good, because Dan's got a pub quiz.
Yes.
Okay, phones away, put a gag on Siri, it's quiz time. Elvis's black belt was in karate. I saw it on QI. No half points for saying J.K. Rowling is the lead singer of Jamiroquai.
Moira Stewart.
No, I'm afraid it was Gordon Honeycomb.
My mate Seb did a little pub quiz for us on New Year's Eve, actually.
Oh, how'd you get on?
Nice.
I didn't win. Oh. Really, the worst things about it was he looked onto everybody's Twitters and found out how many posts we'd done, and we had to guess how many posts we'd done since we started on Twitter, now X. And I said, oh, me, about 10,000. Turns out I'd done about 56,000 tweets or something, which is like 11 a day or something, which just makes me disgusted in myself. No wonder I haven't done anything with my life.
That's a great tweeting thing for a quiz, though.
Yeah.
Hard to do in a pub environment, though, to research every single person in the pubs.
Yeah, tricky.
No, you could do how many is a famous person.
Yeah, though. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Love that. Yeah.
Nice. Have you got as well thought out a pub quiz, Dan?
I have. Three questions. And Sean, you know, I'd like to say you're a radio broadcasting legend. I suspect You wouldn't like me to say that.
No, I
mean, would you like me to say?
You know, bashfulness wouldn't allow
it. Yes, exactly. So, but I thought radio history.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Let's do a little quiz on radio history. Right. Three questions.
Right.
So I'm going to ask them. Have
I don't
a
know
think.
These either. This is we're
yeah,
against
yeah,
each other.
Be against each other.
Oh, okay.
So you're probably the favourite because
it's
so it's my specialist
your
subject.
Wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I don't know what wheelhouse is.
I don't understand that.
No.
Is it where? Is it in a
it's a place
water
where they
mill?
Make wheels. Yeah, I think probably is a water mill.
It's not important. Yeah.
What, is that one of the questions?
Do I get points for that?
It's a wheelhouse. So I'm going to ask them, have a think. We're going to do the answers in the second
All
part
right.
of the pod.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay. First one. The first words uttered on BBC Radio 1 were, "And good morning, everyone. Welcome to the exciting new sound of Radio 1. But who said them?" Mm-hmm. Question two. Smashy and Nicey were DJ characters created by Harry Enfield and Paul Whitehouse. But what fictional station did they broadcast from?
That's a really good one.
And you'll know it when you hear it, because I couldn't remember, and then I was like, oh, yeah. And third, Annie Nightingale was Radio 1's first female DJ in 1970, but there wasn't another one added to the roster for another 12 years. Who was it?
That's good. These are good.
I'm going to get none of these.
Oh, I thought you'd do well on radio. Such a... I thought you
that
were quite a good
one's tricky
radio.
As well.
So what was it? What was the last one? Annie Nightingale was... What,
yeah,
year?
Was the 1970. The next one wasn't...
So
the next female DJ was not added till 82.
For those of you who are interested, a wheelhouse is a part of a boat or ship serving as a shelter for the person at the wheel.
Oh, okay. My wheelhouse.
Does that make
my
sense?
Little world.
Not really, but that's what it is. So blame the dictionary. All right, that brings us to the end of the first half of The Moon Underwater with Sean Keaveney. For those of you who did not support The Moon Underwater on Patreon, if you'd like to subscribe, you can head to moonunderpod.com and sign up to get ad-free extended episodes a day early, a monthly bonus podcast, and access to The Moon Underwater Social Club on the Facebook. We'll see you soon in part two. We'll continue creating Sean's dream pub.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.